Hello, and welcome to Generation Goat number 37.
In a row?
I am E. Christopher Clark, and with me as always is John Martin.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey.
Wow. 37.
Nice.
Nice.
You know?
Try not to podcast a parking lot.
It's been a long time since I've watched a Kevin Smith movie or thought about a Kevin Smith anything.
It stays with you.
It does. It does. I was searching for something to listen to on the ride home from teaching today, and I almost picked Kevin Smith's interview with Neil Gaiman and Amanda Palmer, but I decided to listen to our podcast instead.
Oh.
For research, that's, you know.
Marvelously egotistical of you. Well done. Yeah. Now, I haven't watched any in a while either. One of the very few movies I own on iTunes is Zach and Miri Make a Porno.
Oh yeah.
And I don't buy my movies that way, but I did once when I was traveling. And I watched it an awful lot because it happened to be handy. So
right. Yeah.
That one I've seen like 30 times. not because it's his best, but just because it was there. Yeah. But no, Netflix changes everything.
Yeah, Netflix does. What the heck was I? Just before we started talking, I was thinking about something I needed to watch on Netflix. Oh, it was because I've been slowly but surely digitizing, or not digitizing, but moving Geek Force 5 content over to my new website. And I saw a trailer for
from all those old like Geek Force 5 journals, the paper ones from the library.
Yes.
Microfilm.
But. Yes, the microfiche versions have been particularly troublesome.
I would actually really have liked your website if it were like a 1940s newsreel, like before a movie, you know.
Next time I have a friend who puts out a feature film, I'm going to have to look into that.
And our boys in spandex are on the march. It'll be wonderful. Sorry.
Well, so it was like a Jonah Hill. Is that the big dude from Superbad? Is that?
That sounds like a real thing. Let's go.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's a movie about him being a babysitter, and I saw a trailer for it, and I was like, I would never pay money for that, but if it was on Netflix, I might watch it. There's a lot of things that are like, if it's on Netflix, why not?
I actually kind of worry about that, because there are a lot of things, now Nora has access to my Netflix, and there are a lot of things that it recommends to me that just look so awful that I have to take a look. But then, like, it doesn't tell you that, like, you watched 4 minutes of this and then
right.
Turned it off. So
yeah.
Nora's, you know, if she ever gets like curious, is going to dig around and be like, wow, he's watched all of the direct to video, you know, American Pie movies. but mostly it's because it suggests them and I'm
right.
Bored and I'm like, that looks so awful. I have to see what it is.
Yeah. And then all it takes is 4 minutes of any of those.
Right. And the worst thing too, is they show up on your like recently watched things.
Right.
You log in, you're like, really?
Yeah, my problem there is that I share Netflix with Stephanie and with Kaylee. And so the chances of me ever finding anything on recently watched that I want to watch are very slim. You know, Stephanie is all about the documentaries and like History Channel, Discovery Channel type stuff. And of course, Kaylee is all over the Just for Kids section. So,
well, the weird thing is, too, it's like it lets you make lists, but you can't actually like switch user without.
Right.
Going crazy. So, yeah.
I don't know. It is both a blessing and a curse, the Netflix.
Yeah, but Netflix does change everything. And I fear that one day my list will be made public.
Well, you know, all they have to do is incorporate themselves with Facebook somehow. Is it true? Okay, so you are the font of all knowledge as far as I'm concerned. So this
sure.
Is it true that Facebook somewhere along the lines back on our timelines has released our private messages?
No.
I saw that thing go around a couple of people's walls and people that I didn't expect to pass that kind of thing on.
That one is in the vein of like, oh my God, Gmail's going to start charging. You know, that what happened was that stuff that existed before there was a messaging component.
Mm-hmm.
Is technically on your timeline, but that's because it was on your wall.
Right.
And people, I think, are often kind of shocked when they look back and say, oh my God, that's, you know, private now, but,
right.
You know. So it's worth going back and looking through your old stuff as a general rule. when you first go on to Timeline, because it is, it's worth looking through it. But yeah, no, they didn't actually release people's messages. I think right now they really can't afford a lot more ill will from the general public. So,
speaking of,
with their investors more particularly.
Right. Speaking of ill will and the public, what's your thoughts on Twitter, which has been doing like a whole bunch of weird.
I don't get it. I really don't. I mean, Twitter. Okay. So for people who maybe aren't following, what Twitter has recently done is they've changed their API, not once, but twice. And they basically locked out third party people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a start, right? So
yeah.
All those wonderful Twitter apps that we're all fond of using largely don't work, or they work, but they have restricted functionality.
Right.
And then now there's, you know, of course, the advertisement, the promoted tweet, the whatever.
Yeah.
And I see that they're trying to like get in on the Facebook thing, but it's, I don't understand it. You know, Twitter got popular because they built a dead simple protocol, you know, with a really simple premise. It was, you know, a useful API, and it encouraged a third party community and integration with other apps. And now they want all the money to themselves. And to me, that seems really stupid. I don't get it. You know, if they had started off like Facebook, you know, with a completely closed system that you had to get into, and then, you know, you could make a reasonable case that you're shut in for a reason, then fine, but they didn't. You know, they roped this all in by being open and public, and now closing in. So,
I don't get it. I mean, I get it. Somebody there in a business suit has decided that that this needs to be a business now. And I mean, I understand. But it makes me wary because, you know, a lot of stuff I listen to outside of sort of what we're doing here, you know, they talk about what might replace these things. And, you know, they talk about how a decentralized Twitter, something like that, would be awesome, but it's just not really even possible. And I see these things coming out trying to replicate it. App.net comes out and tries to charge $50 and now $36 or $5 a month or something like that for the same thing that you get for free on Twitter. And it's just like, are we ever going to get something that will last for an extended period of time like this, you know, or is it always going to be, you know, it's going to be a great honeymoon period and then suck after a while?
Well, I mean, my feeling is that it's not really something that's possible on the IPv4 addressing system that we use now. You know, for people, again, who don't necessarily know what that is, your internet address is in four parts. Each part can be up to three digits, you know, so 111.22.333.44. Yeah. we're running out of those addresses. In fact, most blocks of the earth where they, you know, kind of portion them are out. They're just out. So there's kind of a secondary auction market going on. The replacement IPv6 is in the works. Most major ISPs have already made the switch. And as you would expect, instead of four parts, it's six parts, which adds quintillions of addresses. Enough that if you had the Earth evenly divided up, every square meter of Earth could get three addresses. So I think when something like that comes along, it'll be a lot easier to have kind of a persistent identity. And you know, to have machines that can have a kind of permanent, you know, presence. And in so doing, you could have a more decentralized thing because your machine actually has an identity that is shareable and stable, which is something that isn't, you know, possible now. So I think maybe when something like that comes along, then revisiting the whole decentralized thing, because it's not just, you know, the Twitter replication. I mean, Diaspora was the Facebook replacement, which died. You know, I mean, okay, one of their, you know, founders committed suicide, and that's pretty hard to recover from in general. I mean, they have put it out. It is out as software, but it's it's very hard to deal with. So I don't know. I mean, I think the problem in general is that people want services for free. Somehow everybody has the idea that the internet, everything on the internet is free, and nobody pays for it, and nobody has to pay to make it. I don't begrudge Twitter wanting to make money because I'm sure they need money, you know, but I think there are ways to make money that don't alienate all of your users at once. kind of like the whole patent wars thing that's going on. You know, it just right. really doesn't benefit anybody but companies. And, no. you know, so, yeah, I don't know. You know, Twitter is one of those things that seems indispensable. But then yeah. again, if you had asked anybody in the 90s, you know, are we ever going to do without Yahoo or GeoCities or something,
right.
you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's yeah. a fair point.
I'm actually, you know, it's exciting to think about what could come next, but.
Yeah. You know. I mean, yeah, I agree because, and I think it's exciting. It's also frustrating because so many of these things that are trying to come out, app.net, yeah. Tent.io, which yeah. attempts to be a decentralized thing, but now there's Tent.is.
Well, think about, you know, just think about the late 90s in general, you know, think about, yeah. or think about MySpace and how many MySpace pretenders there were, or, right. you know, how many search engine pretenders there are. I mean, you can still use ask.com, apparently.
is Jeeves still responding to requests?
No, Jeeves is not involved, but you can still use Ask. You can still use Alta Vista, apparently. You know, it's... Yeah, I mean, this happens every time there's a bubble, and social media is this decade's bubble, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, imagine you had told someone 10 years ago that Zynga would be $1 billion company, you know, the people who make Farmville.
Right.
But there yeah. you go, you know, it's...
It is what it is.
This yeah. is the bubble, so give it a year or two, and we'll move on to whatever the next thing is.
Right, yeah, I guess I just, I like... Twitter a lot, and
I like it too. I like using it. I like what it does. Yeah. I don't want to rebuild that community somewhere else.
Right. And I as we've talked about many times, don't particularly dig what Facebook does, but no, you know, I kind of
those things you have to have now.
Yeah. And I don't foresee a scenario in the near future where I can stop having Facebook. I mean, I go ahead and often I'll cross post or do a variation of the same post on both places and get more immediate feedback on Facebook than I do on Twitter. It's just, it's where people are.
That's also why when you go on these like purging kicks, like you did last week, like, I'm going to kill all of my accounts. And then you don't because somewhere inside you recognize that
but
Facebook.
Well, I mean, over the summer, I did kill a lot of accounts.
Yeah, your Flickr thing went away, I discovered one day.
Yeah.
I don't know why I was looking for it. I think I was looking for a photo of a play we were in or something.
Yeah.
And yeah, like it just went away.
Well, the Flickr thing was not wanting to put all of the eggs in the Yahoo basket. It seems like Yahoo, of all the companies that's out there, like really doesn't have a clue what they're doing.
Well.
And so I don't know. I mean, and also I don't know. I had too many things I was trying to manage, and that's where the
yeah. No, go ahead.
I don't know. I try to analyze. Well, with the social media stuff, where that purge comes from, because the purging thing is a recurring thing in life this last year.
You're a big Belinda Carlisle fan. We get it. No. Too soon.
Ouch. Well, so, I mean, the social media stuff was me sitting there and going, like, if I'm not actually going to use this network
yeah.
for anything, why am I investing time and mental energy in it? Because even if I'm not on Flickr, there's this part of me going, oh, man, I need to go update my Flickr. I need to update my photos. Huh. I need to do this.
I never feel compelled to do that. I guess maybe that's the difference, like, where I don't yet
yeah.
follow. Because I never feel like... You know, like I haven't posted to Twitter probably in 2 months now, but I just like I think about that. And I'm like, yeah, so.
Yeah, no, I think I do think that's a difference. This approach that I've taken would not work for
yeah.
And is not necessary for most people. I'm just trying to identify my own
yeah.
the sources of anxiety, sources of sadness. And I know that there was a point there where I wouldn't go near the photos on my computer because I knew part of the process was getting them onto Flickr at the end, and it was just this thing.
I like, hear you.
And so now, you know, I have no pressure to put them on Flickr. They're being backed up elsewhere automatically without me having to do anything. And I just I edit them when I feel like it.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. I don't have it with most things, but like I get submissions for the website all the time, and there's a couple in there right now that I'm really excited about. But at the same time, it's like, gee, I haven't updated that in a while. I really should do that. And then I just feel sad. So, like, I do understand that. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like, as far as the, like, all the eggs in one basket thing is, like, I guess for me, it's like, if the tool works, then the tool works. Yeah. Like, I have a lot of stuff, like, through Picasa that I've uploaded to Google, and I'm fine with that. I like Picasa. It works well, and, you know, the backup part is nice. But, yeah, for me, it's, like, whatever tool works best. And, you know, like, let's say you had, I don't know, one really great mapping application that you didn't make, but you really liked it. It might not be worth replacing that for the sake of replacing it if it's going to, say, move, I don't know, Berlin to Antarctica. You know, or melt buildings in New York City.
Fair enough.
I'm just saying.
I think the eggs in one basket was a. I shouldn't have used that metaphor. I think because I certainly
you shouldn't use metaphor at all. It's lazy. Ask Hemingway.
Because I certainly there are a couple of baskets that I have quite a few eggs in. No, I mean, I think the Flickr thing is more of the second part that I talked about. But there are other networks that I purged, like LinkedIn. Like, I had a LinkedIn, but I never updated it.
I never bothered. I don't see the point. Yeah, like, maybe that's the point at which I'm too old, but I didn't get it. I keep getting requests from, like, students I've had who want me as part of their network. And I'm like, why would you want my resume as part of your digital life?
Yeah, I don't get the LinkedIn thing. I did it. Well, I think part of why I purged so many social media accounts is because I went through that period of, you know, I had this great cushy job, not cushy, but this great job at a nonprofit for years, 5-6 years. And towards the end of that started, like, the social media thing started to infect me, and I got all involved in that. And then for 3 months I was social media, not guru, but the second command of social media on this company I worked at, or I don't know where I was in the flow chart. Anyway, but I was deep into social media. And
I like how it went from cushy job to deputy undersecretary of social media. But carry on.
No, so I'm saying, like, I went from a job where I was involved with books and writing and literature and whatever, and then I succumbed to, like, the allure of social media and signed up for every damn service as I became part of this other job that I left my literary job for. Mm-hmm. And that job lasted like 3 months, but I was still signed up for every social media service under the sun.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, I sat there this summer going, why do I have this? Why do I have this? And I wanted to reduce the number of places that I put myself out there. So now, I mean, I'm pretty much down to Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, me too, actually. There are accounts that I haven't killed, but they're effectively dead.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, we did a whole episode of the show on Google Plus. I don't know what's going on with that.
I haven't updated it in a while, but I'm really encouraged to see that actually most of the people I like from Facebook have moved there. Which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
I still feel it's a superior service to Facebook. It's a lot less intrusive, and I actually really like the granularity of sharing. It's nice to be able to make an ad hoc group of people and be like, yeah, okay, you 6 people who are regularly in this circle plus that one guy for this one thing, you know?
I mean, when I was on there, I definitely saw the appeal of it, and I think if it was something that people moved over to en masse, and I could be encouraged to go sign up for a Google account again. See, when we put purging on the list of topics to talk about today, I wasn't sure if it was all about the social media stuff, which, you know, as we talk about, I often am like, I'm going to get rid of Facebook. And
it's true. You're like old man Facebook. You come out, you're like, I'm going to kill this thing. I hate it. And then a week later, you're like, well, I was going to kill it, and then it looked at me just right.
Yeah. Give me the big bad puppet dog eyes.
It's true. It's funny, though, because, like, I have 5 or 6 people on my Facebook wall who routinely, like, once a week are like, I hate this thing. I'm going to delete it. And then the next day they're like, didn't delete it, but still thinking about it. Like,
guilty as charged.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the other thing that I thought you might have been alluding to is I was talking about getting rid of some books off my bookshelf. And there's lots of times where I'm talking about getting rid of stuff, or, you know, the other night I was getting rid of a whole bunch of clothes and And I sat there and I tried to think about if he asked me that on the podcast, how would I respond to that? And I still don't know if I have a great answer, except that I'm focused on trying not to get attached to the idea of getting rid of attachments.
Sure.
If that makes any sense.
Sure.
You know, there are there were books up on my bookshelf. I'm looking up. Nobody in the audience, the listener, can see it, but I'm looking up at my bookshelf, and it feels a lot better now because I see a smaller stack of books that I know I want to read, as opposed to like the four or five that were staring at me like, "You must read me, read me, read me," and I never had over the course of 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I don't know. I've got the same stack of books next to my bed that I've had since I don't know. A year ago. And they're all books. They're the next books I will read.
Right.
Theoretically. But I just, I don't know. I think I don't get rid of them because I know that in my life there have been times where, like, I got The Lord of the Rings at one point when I was younger, and I started to read it and I was like, ugh, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just left it on the shelf. But then I picked it up, you know, 15 years ago and went, holy crap, this has been sitting on my shelf the whole time.
Yeah.
So I go for the serendipity approach, and I always feel like there's going to be a moment where that book, there's a reason I got that book. Now, that said, there are a lot of books that I could see where that would be comforting, but I don't know. Like, again, like, my brain works so differently. Like, I would look at that bookshelf if it were mine and be like, it's different now. Mm. Oh, because there used to be things, and then I would feel sad.
Yeah.
It's really stupid.
No, I mean, I understand where you're coming from. And I kind of am taking the approach, it's not economically great approach, but I've taken the approach of, if I'm meant to read this thing, I will probably come back and find myself a copy at the library or this again. But all of the things I got rid of are things that I read maybe 100 pages of.
Right.
And then just it was a struggle to keep going, or I just wasn't interested.
Right. Yeah, so, no, I've definitely been there before. Like, for instance, you know, the literary classic, he says in air quotes, Tristram Shandy is never going to happen in my life again. And I'm pretty sure I don't have that anymore. I'm pretty sure I threw it in a ditch. No, I don't know. It's weird. Like, I definitely hoard things. Like, I have a hard time throwing out things. I think, I don't know, like, not to get too, like, meh about it, but I think a lot of that has to do with having kind of a lonely childhood and, like, having to be very insular. And so my things were kind of, like, my friends in some ways, which is a sad statement about the 80s in American culture, but kind of true.
No, I mean, yeah, definitely.
You know, and so it's like when, like, I have two different Nintendos. I have my last working Nintendo, and then I have one that I acquired, which is kind of broken, but I can't get rid of the broken one because it's a Nintendo, and because it came from people I know, and because if I get rid of it, then I'm losing the attachment. I think it's because I have a very visual memory, and so seeing the thing brings me to those people in a way that other people don't have that kind of, you know, visceral connection to things. They just remember the people, they move on. This is all getting really stupid, sorry.
No. It's not getting stupid. No, I mean, it's getting to the point of the difference there. I don't think I could pinpoint exactly where what my attachment to things is. I know for sure that what
most generation goat listeners agree with that sentiment. I don't know why the hell I'm here.
But what I feel like is, if I can't see this stuff right now, or I can't foresee a scenario where I'm going to, for like a book, if I can't foresee a scenario where I'm going to pick up that book and love it, I kind of just don't want to look at it because I feel guilty looking at it. I feel guilty every time I go in my closet now and I look at my comic books, and I know that there's not many scenarios where I can envision I'm ever going to get to read them again. Or I look up at the top of my...
You can't get rid of your comics, though. Come on.
Well, let's come back to that. There's a box of Star Wars and Transformers toys up in my closet, and I feel guilty when I see that because they're in a box. They should be out and being played with, or at least be on a shelf.
Well, that's something you can do something about. Take them out, dust them off, and let the kids demolish them.
Well, I gotta keep one of the Dinobots so that you can play with it, because we've had that conversation. But the comic books, seriously, like I need to purge the hell out of the comic
books. Dude.
No, the bad ones. That I've set out, like, in my brain, there's a few series that I want to keep around. My entire Uncanny X-Men collection, pretty much all my Vertigo books, some guilty pleasures from my childhood, like New Warriors, probably Amazing Spider-Man. But then I've got all these random things that I collected for a little bit here, a little bit there. I don't have any real attachment to them, or they were part of the 90s, like, collecting boom. Right. And I just, like, if I could get rid of all the stuff that doesn't matter, then I think my comic books would be in a place where I could take them out once in a while, and I could read Days of Future Past to find out, you know, whether or not the movie is going to be any good.
It damn well better be. If they half-ass it like they did in X3, I'm going to kill someone.
Right. I was saying, I was listening to our last episode before we came on. We talked about that. And so I really want to go dig out Days of Future Past and give it a read. But I mean, there's so many things I want to dig out and give a read, except there's just so much crap on top of it or surrounding it that I don't even know where to start. And so that's where a lot of the purging comes in. Like getting rid of my old clothes the other night was a similar thing. Like I knew I had a couple of cool T-shirts that I'd buried in this drawer for like safekeeping, but they were buried beneath a bunch of things that were either ripped or too big or that I was never going to wear again. And so that's where a lot of my purging is coming from, is like paring down to the stuff that I'm actually going to do anything with.
Yeah, I hear you.
And yet I have that same feeling of like, oh, but that's my shirt from, you know, that concert, or
I could never get rid of concert shirts. Yeah. I can't do it. Like that's the one thing where it's like, this is ripped or it's way too small or, you know, it somebody has spray painted racial epithets on it, but I still like can't get rid of it. I just will be careful to wear it.
My first Nine Inch Nails shirt I have not gotten rid of. That one is too big for me and ripped in so many damn places. And also just like you can tell it was worn a lot. So like the fabric is a lot thinner than it was.
Yeah, but it's battle tested. You can get rid of that.
It's awesome, but it doesn't fit me anymore. Oh, wow. I would love to be able to wear it or do something with it. Because it's got the first show I ever went to was this Nine Inch Nails show, and it was the Further Down the Spiral tour, and the front of it is this piece of rope that's sort of in a circle. And I remember the first time I saw it up on the wall at the Worcester Centrum, and my initial impression was that it was cat vomit.
Nice.
and I still think that every time I look at it, but
Wow, you would be fun at a psychiatrist's office. The answer we were looking for was a butterfly.
A butterfly.
Cat vomit. Sure.
Cat vomit. Sure. Yeah. Go you. And yeah, I was just writing about that that concert yesterday.
Oh yeah.
Well, a fictionalized version of that concert.
Is this for the mystery play that you're writing? That is not our play.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Well, and here's the I've probably alluded to what this play is, but never come right out and said it. My novel, which I talked about last time, I talked about doing a rewrite on the novel. I also got some feedback after Crossroads or the Piano of Death, which was the play I did this past summer, which was also sourced from the novel, that I should try to write something full length with those same characters with in that same world, that I was onto something. So I got that bit of feedback, and I also just got the general feedback that Crossroads of Piano Death was a much more economical way of telling that story than I've ever been able to accomplish in 10 or so years of trying to write it. So I said, as an exercise, I don't know if anything will happen with it, but as an exercise, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to try to write the last third of the novel, which has always given me the hardest time, and write it as a play, so that I'm forced to condense it into the most important parts. And so that's what I've been doing. And so that's why I ended up writing that that concert scene that I've now written a whole bunch of times.
Crazy.
But it was a lot of fun. Yeah. But not our play.
Well, I think I'll stay away from it because the last thing I read of yours that involved that concert scene was not horribly flattering, actually.
Yeah. Sorry.
Like, wow. Attack me for being a dick. Fine, but can we please leave my jacket and my watch out of this?
But your jacket and your watch were awesome. See, that's the thing.
No, they weren't. I read that story. They do not come off well.
No, but they were, they in real life, they were awesome. On that character in that story.
Yeah. I see. I see.
I'm a fiction writer. I guess it's just, it's proof that nobody should be friends with me. I think that's...
Well, I mean, I guess I was somewhat saved by the fact that not all traits of that character were me.
Hmm.
But, you know, I was kind of reading it like, all right, that's fine. I'm going to write my own piece of fiction. E. Christopher Clark was a bastard who lived in Chelmsford, Massachusetts.
I didn't mean it that way.
One day, he got stuck in a log while trying to get honey.
Isn't it that he lost his tail?
That too. In the story, he's both Eeyore and Winnie the Pooh.
No, I mean, all of those characters are amalgamations of people. It's just that that character had a lot of stuff that you had. I'm sorry.
I'm never showing you that watch again.
That watch was awesome. That watch was part of the reason that we had watches as gifts for the groomsmen in my wedding. Because I loved the idea of a pocket watch. I don't know if you had the watch at the wedding prior to us making this decision, but basically, like, last minute at the wedding, my mother and I were talking at the rehearsal dinner, or just before it, what do you want to do for all the guys? I was like, I have no idea. And somebody mentioned the pocket watch, and I was like, yes, let's do that. And the other ones that people got probably weren't all that great. But,
well, don't worry. I'm not going to give you a watch. That's not going to happen.
A swift kick in the ass.
We should probably tell people this all happened on your new website.
It did.
Relatively yes. New.
Relatively
new. New since the last podcast.
Yeah, no, I relaunched the website as promised, echristopherclark.com. And yeah, it's been going well. I have one or two observations I've made over the course of a month or so of it being up. But
you're obsessing over the analytics, aren't you? I can see it.
No. Well, yes and no. Actually, the analytics has been fun to watch because it's one thing I loved about Google Analytics was how detailed it got. But one thing I hated about Google Analytics was how detailed it got because I would obsess. Here, what I found is all I really look at is the number of uniques per day. And I just sort of like, I look at the trends, and when a new story of the week gets published, it tends to go up, or when a new post gets published, it tends to go up, but it stays pretty steady at a small, number, and I'm pretty happy with it. The one trend that I have obsessed about, is the VIP section. Mm-hmm. And of course the VIP section was the part that was giving me the most grief before the site launched, because I was trying to figure out a way to have a password protected section that all of my collected works would be in. And I wasn't sure, you know, was it going to do it with Expression Engine? Was I going to try to go over to WordPress? Were we going to do something custom? Could I do it on Squarespace? And I finally came up with something. But here's the thing. One person has signed up for the VIP section.
It happens.
And what occurred to me was I started looking at the way that I read content. Content, I hate that word in that context. How I read longer articles or stories or whatever.
You could just say how I read.
I mean, I could, but I mean, I'm talking digitally. So when I've got my, when I got my tablet and I'm sitting there and I'm scanning through things, if I find an article of any length, I send it over to Instapaper, which is a dedicated reader. If I'm going to read something that's a short story or a collection of short stories, generally speaking, I'm reading it in the Kindle reader or I'm reading it in iBooks. I don't generally read long form stuff in a web browser. How about you?
Not if I can help it. I don't like it. I know a lot of people who don't have this problem, but I actually find it harder to concentrate. I'm not sure if it's the luminosity of what I'm looking at or mm-hmm. some other thing, but my brain just, it's like everything turns into soft focus after a few moments. Mm-hmm. And yeah, if it's something I really have to concentrate on, I can't do it. Like anything, like I've read a lot of articles academically that are in electronic journals or whatever, and if it's important enough, I always have to print it out, which is weird. It's like a weird shortcoming, especially considering how much of my life I live online. But
yeah,
I do the Instapaper thing like you do for short stuff. I have it hooked into my Google Reader and just about everything else, Flipboard, and just about anything else that like I receive new articles in. So mm-hmm. it's a nice way to shuttle stuff off. And I use Pinboard for long-term storage from that.
Right.
But yeah, no, anything long or anything detailed, like I don't know. It's weird because I can program, you know, like I can look at long blocks of code and I can pay attention to that. But yeah, I don't know. It's weird. It's a weird cognitive handicap or something.
Well, and I don't feel the need to print, but I do feel this really weird handicap about reading in a web browser versus reading in something that's dedicated to reading. So much of my reading in a tablet, but I can't do it in a web browser. And so that brought me to like realizing that there might be an inherent flaw in the way that I decided to pursue the VIP section, the collected works, in that it all lives in a web browser. And it's not, if it even just lived in an e-reader, it might be a better thing. Where people like seem willing to respond to a story a week, at least the page views and the uniques indicate that they're going to the story of the week.
Yeah.
And whether or not they read it or not, I'm not paying attention to how long they spend on the page. They seem to be willing to do that, but to have only one person sign up for the VIP makes me wonder if, I mean, yes, to a certain extent, the VIP is just a reprint of what's been in the two collections. And most of the people that I'm targeting right now have read the two collections.
Right.
And there's a bunch of factors in play, but.
Well, I mean, it's a new site, right? And, you know, it takes time. You really have to establish a presence before people are going to start paying you, right? That's a thing. And
oh, yeah. Well, I mean, and the important thing about the VIP, and you made this call, I mean, you made this suggestion to me, whether it was on the podcast or like right after a podcast a few episodes ago, of a trial period. And so the VIP section for people who have a copy of the book or went to one of my plays is absolutely free for as much as 6 months.
I think that makes sense.
And so I've just been, I don't know if that's clear enough. I don't know if but yeah, I mean, to attract paying customers, for sure, you're absolutely right. It'd take a while.
I think also part of it, like the web browser reading thing too, like, okay, first of all, I should say I hate websites that needlessly paginate. Drives me nuts. I really, you know, like you go to Mashable or Ars Techno or something, and it's like, here's our article. We've written four paragraphs. Click here for the next page. Like, guys, you could just have the ads change on their own. I don't really need to refresh your page.
Yeah.
But so that drives me nuts. But on the other hand, if I'm reading a long piece of content, I actually start feeling an anxiety. Like, it's weird. It's really weird. It's an attention span thing or something. I start feeling like, when am I going to get to the bottom of this?
I think you're absolutely right. It's the one downfall of, and I'm sure there's a setting for this in Instapaper that I just haven't found, but it's the one downfall of Instapaper for me is some of the longer articles I've read in the last couple of weeks, if I see that scroll bar on the side and it's just very slowly going down the side, I start to get a little anxious. Like, I really want to read this, but am I going
to? It's weird too, because usually in those situations, you're like, yeah, I need to have more time because I need to get to the next thing I'm going to waste time with. You know, like, it's like we don't focus on the fact that the thing we're doing is wasting time. But
Yeah, I agree with you about the pagination on websites. Pagination in a dedicated reader
just drives me nuts.
Where you're reading something long form is different.
Yeah. I mean, I have you know, my music site is a WordPress blog, and WordPress blogs by default, you know, have, you know, you do X articles and then new page.
Right.
And I'm okay with that because it's a speed thing. But any individual article that you click on is just, you know, whatever length it is. And, you know, I'm fine with that. But even that, like, I kind of wish there's a lot of things I don't like about Facebook. But one of the things that is nice with your stupid newsfeed is that, you know, roll down. It just keeps going until your newsfeed eventually ends, which it doesn't, because they'll fill it with ads. But
yeah,
yeah, I think that's the sort of thing that I really do prefer. And I think it works for a collection of articles. It's very hard to do within an article in a way, but
yeah,
you know, like I read the New York Times online, and you know, they have magazine section. Magazine articles tend to be, you know, 11 pages,
right?
But they're all long pages, so I wouldn't want that necessarily to just, you know, fill up my screen for the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think intent is definitely a factor there, because the Times is doing it, I mean, yes, probably to sell more ads on one level, but to make a more pleasant reading experience,
yeah,
is probably the more important thing. Whereas Mashable, Ars Technica, these sites that you were mentioning before, are really, their business relies on page views and on selling as many damn ads as possible. That's why when I sort of sit there and I think the mark of a great website that I want to read is how many ads. If they've got maybe one, if they're somebody who uses the Deck, or there's a bunch of other sort of single serve ad networks out there. If they've got that sort of one that's there, and I know that they're using a network that pretty much that pays them well,
right,
for writing awesome content that people come back for. And I'm much more likely to subscribe to Marco.org or any,
yeah,
of these sites that have a Deck ad and then nothing else. Then I am to subscribe to Ars Technica.
I get weird spam from advertisers. Like, I guess it's not technically spam. It's unsolicited business propositions, you know, where people are like,
yeah,
hey, I do this poker website. Can I pay you $50 a year to put a poker ad on your website? And it's like, have you looked at my site? I don't even have ads.
Yeah.
And it's a music site. Why am I going to be like, the moment I need to break into advertising is now, and the thing I need to do it with is poker?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's very weird. Like, I know that advertising is pretty much the biggest industry online, but it is, you know, kind of weird the way people go about it when you meet them day to day.
Right. Well, it's the biggest industry online, but it's also the most hated thing online. Like, who likes ads? Nobody likes,
yeah,
ads.
Yeah.
People install things into their browsers to block ads.
There, you know, it's funny too, because I mean, I think Adblock Plus is probably the most popular ad blocking software, I would say, for, you know, Firefox and Chrome, certainly. And, you know, recently, it was maybe early this year, maybe it was late last year, they made a change where you still have your huge blacklist, but they gave you the option of, you know, being friendly to sites that were kind of seen as, you know, more reputable. So if you, or that you wanted to support.
Right.
So, like, by default, you could leave the ads on the New York Times or Slashdot or various charities or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, I actually did say, okay, yeah, you can leave that on because, fine, fair enough. But, yeah, it is true. Like, since the dawn of the web, like, the worst thing in the world has been advertising. And, you know, thankfully, it's often less egregious than it used to be. I mean, you know, thinking about GeoCities and,
yeah,
the enormous number of flashing banners and that, like, weird monkey that went back and forth that you had to,
yep,
punch. You know, like, yeah, it's not quite that bad, but
right.
I mean, there are some sites I read that do have good content, but 90% of the white space on the page is ad.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, that's why I went for the design that I went for, which is a lot of white space. Every once in a while I look at it and I go, that's a lot of white space. And then I back off and remind myself that I'm not redesigning things. But yeah, no, I mean, I've part of my minimal purge, keep things simple outlook has been to not only make my own stuff as white space heavy as possible, but to support,
yeah,
sites that do.
That is a really white page.
It is a very white page. but I am a very white man. So
what's interesting to me is that you don't, like, the first thing you have up right now is the story of the week, which is about,
yeah,
apparently why I suck so hard. And what's interesting is that it's just as long as it is, that there's no, like, you know, click to read more or that kind of thing. Were you worried,
yeah,
that people wouldn't click through, or did you make a choice to, like, not break up?
Oh, this
is... Because there's articles underneath it, is my... So, for me, it's, you know, you think, well, are they getting to the article below it?
That was a... on that page, it's a... structural hurdle I haven't quite cleared. Because what I'd ideally like to have happen is have the story of the week be on its own page, and then all of the other ones be sort of five to a page. But right now, the issue is there's no way Well, Squarespace just unleashed a developer platform, so it's probably possible. But right now, there's no way to say page one is one article and every other page is five.
Right.
But there's probably a way around it. I just haven't done it yet. But yeah, no, I consciously didn't want to break it up because of that feeling of wanting the as close to an Instapaper-like experience as you could get in a browser. So something that was really just all about the text, all about the content, and that was that. So
cool.
I had hoped that I was going to put photos with each story. I like the fact that Geek Force 5 made a habit of what That Little Bastard made a habit of.
But like does it a lot in your blog section.
Yeah, the blogs I generally have found a photo because I'm finding things that they're either Creative Commons or they're so public that it's not an issue. I wanted to collaborate with someone on photos, but I put up that post within the last month now, since the site launched, about paying your people. And I really want to stick by that. Like, if I can't afford to give someone compensation, then I don't want to leech off of them. So I had this idea that I was going to get a photographer involved, but I have no money coming into the site. So.
Well, I mean, you know, there are different forms of compensation.
Right.
You know, and with your purging thing, it might not be. No, never mind. It's going somewhere with that. The Waysiders would go. And then I thought, let's leave it. No, but I mean, you could always, if you had a friend that was a photographer that you couldn't necessarily monetarily compensate, you might be able to compensate them with, you know, some sort of like feature or something. Mm.
Yeah. And that's what I'm thinking for a possible venture into ebooks is that I want to get an artist, either photographer, illustrator involved and split the whatever minimal profits would be there with that person, because I think the cover of an ebook is a huge part of what sells it.
Yeah.
So that I think might be the place to go. And then if I were able to get anything going with short EPUBs, Kindle singles or things like that, then that I think could subsidize reproducing that same photograph or illustration on the website.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever that story maybe was a story of the week.
Yeah. Cool.
So, moving on from all of that stuff, ham-fisted transition.
Hooray. If anybody's even still here, sorry, everybody. This has just turned into like us talking about stuff we, you know, like, but isn't actually interesting.
Well, isn't that every episode?
Yeah. Yeah, but this is more of the, like, I have this really great pair of socks on feel, as opposed to, like, I fought a ninja.
We should go fight ninjas.
We should. Apparently, they're dying out.
There was a
New York Times article, again, the New York Times, an article about the guy who apparently is the last ninja master in Japan.
Hmm.
Like, he can't train new apprentices in the ways of the ninja because they're basically all illegal now. So he's the last dude. And when he goes, he says like 500 years of his ninja clan will just die out and they're the last one.
Jiminy Cricket.
And we're running out of ninjas.
Mm. Like the League of Shadows. We're running out of those guys.
Nobody even talks about the fact that we're running out of ninjas. Like global warming hugs all the attention and we're running out of ninjas.
Now you see, if we hadn't started the thing where every episode title has to have the word goat in it, then We're Running Out of Ninjas would be a perfect episode title.
I think it might just have to be anyway.
So I was trying to make a ham-fisted transition to saying that last episode we talked about the fact that you hadn't seen The Dark Knight Rises.
That's true.
But now you have, and what did you think?
I really liked it.
No ninjas, but...
Well, no, not really, no. But, no, I thought it was great. I was really worried about it, because when it's kind of known that the next part of your, you know, series is going to be the last part, there's always a tendency to try to make that, you know, the biggest, worst, either most impressive thing ever. And,
right.
You know, thankfully, they didn't Michael Bay it. You know, it actually turned out to be quite good. It was very true to itself. I think it's you know, it's it, when you start reading the comics, you know, that particular installment is based on, it is a little jarring at first, you know, like Batman, the kind of, you know, haggard, you know, not well physically, you know, decrepit kind of person. You think, oh great, this is going to be fantastic. But no, I thought it was great. It was a great story about redemption in a lot of different ways. And yeah, no, it was great. And it had, I really was very happy with the ending and the tone overall. Not so happy with the little kid who was sitting behind us. But I mean, honestly, people, stop bringing your toddlers to movies that really aren't for them. That's
I think just
just stop.
generally stop bringing your toddlers to movies.
Or to anything. Just keep them at home, locked in a dog cage until they're old enough, and then fine. But you know, you did that, and your kid turned out fine.
Just let her out of the kennel last week.
Yeah, and
or two
she's
weeks ago,
fine.
whenever it was when she started first grade.
Yeah, so no problem. But one of the things that really impressed me about it actually was how quiet it was. I mean, you got that sense from the trailer, but it was amazing. It's a detail, but I mean, the use of sound or the absence of sound and how that really worked to heighten tension in a very kind of Stanley Kubrick in The Shining kind of way, you know?
For sure. And you know, that's part of why the kid behind us was that aggravating, is because it's such a quiet movie. I mean, he would have been aggravating regardless, but yeah, no, I dug how quiet it was. How, I don't know, it did do you think it pacing wise, how would you describe the pacing of the thing?
It's a little slow, I mean, at times, but I felt like it was actually taking its time to, you know, do characters a service, as opposed to, you know, we have a third act, but we'd like to stretch out this middle bit first. There it was.
Yeah, no, that's what I was going to say. It's because every time I try to think about it, I think about it being slow, but I don't think about it being slow in that sense of, oh man, can we please get on with the explosions? I just think about it being one of those movies as I've talked about here. Like I will often watch comic book movies in like 30-minute installments while I'm working out in the morning, and I can totally see this one being like a good, like there's a good 30 minutes here and a good 30 minutes there, and it just is something that builds and that you can savor. What did you think about the very ending? I mean, spoiler territory if people
Yeah, you guys should walk away from the podcast now if you haven't seen the movie. Just walk away from the podcast. Okay? Okay. Really, you should go. All right. Well, obviously he was never really going to die. You know, I mean, come on. But I thought it was great the way, you know, Bruce Wayne wraps up everything he wants to wrap up. You know, there's a nice point for the Batman to leave. You know, Gotham has been basically saved from its worst enemies. And, you know, it was a very, I thought it was really interesting the way that the Catwoman arc plays out, you know, because I never kind of saw her as the like going straight marrying Batman type. But, you know, cool. I actually thought it was kind of interesting. It's a great moment for Alfred at the end there.
Oh gosh, that Michael Caine gets that moment is fantastic.
That was pretty awesome. And I like the setup for I guess Robin slash Nightwing slash whoever he is. I think that's kind of cool. It's a nice passing of the torch moment. It's definitely passed to the right person. But it makes you wonder, why do that? I mean, is that for us to feel like the story is always going on somewhere out there? Or, I mean, Nolan has said he's done. And I think I believe him, so.
I believe him. I think it's a weird thing to deal with because I totally believe him, and I totally at first I thought, is this something that DC pushed on him, that Warner Brothers pushed on him? And I don't think
I
that
don't.
anymore. I think if I'm reading it correctly, the idea is that is exactly what you said, that Batman lives on. It's exactly what Ra's al Ghul tried to teach Bruce in the first movie, that if you do, you know, if you play it right, you can become more than just a man, you become a legend. and that there will always be a Batman. And we don't need to see what that Batman gets up to. We just need to know that there will be one.
I wouldn't mind. I mean, it'd be better if Val Kilmer Batman gets up to.
Well, the Val Kilmer one was still better than what the George Clooney Batman got up to.
It's the bat card that really does you.
And the nipples.
Yeah, but it's the bat card. I mean, at that point, Batman would have had to sit down in a boardroom with some people, work out some details. They would have had to come up with contracts. There'd be lawyers present. Would Mr. Batman like to sign here? You know, at least one other lawyer would be like, excuse me, love what you do. You're a great crime fighter, but I have a little bit of a problem entering into a legal agreement with a fictional character. I mean, your name isn't Batman. You weren't born the Batman.
Nope.
Where do you even live? You know? it does make you wonder how that actually happened. I know it's a stupid throwaway joke, but...
No, but,
at some point, you know, it had to actually be hashed out. So.
But the whole thing makes me wonder about whether or not they're going to try to retroactively tie these in with whatever Justice League plans they may have. It seems to me probably not. It seems to me that they'll use, if anything, they'll use the new Man of Steel movie to start that off. But
the only way I thought that they could, because I don't think Christian Bale would come back to do it. I think he said he's done too.
Yeah.
But is if Joseph Gordon-Levitt wanted, if that was how the Batman would continue.
Right.
If he were in that, because that would sort of make sense. But
yeah, I mean, it
and it wouldn't be awful for us, because it would be a different Batman, but not exactly a different, you know, so it's,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see it. I'm curious about what they do there, but I'm not as curious as I am about Marvel stuff. I mean, I feel like they got magic in a bottle with Nolan and this Batman series. I'll go watch the Superman one. I mean, Man of Steel, but
it
I don't.
It could be all right.
It could be fantastic, you know. But I mean, their track record outside of Nolan Batman is not great. I mean, Green Lantern.
Which apparently they're making a sequel to. So well done, everybody.
Yeah.
That's the thing with DC that I don't get. You know, Marvel had the good sense, you know, to say, holy crap, Joss Whedon is the best thing that has happened to us in quite some time. Let's lock him up. And DC, you know, like even when they get good stuff, are kind of like, all right, thanks, bye. We're going to go do something stupid like Green Lantern, you know, and you think that they would,
Yeah, well, and you know, and I think Warner Brothers is the only studio that seems to be missing out on this, because Fox went out and hired Mark Millar, who's the guy behind Kick-Ass, and I think he did the Ultimates, or he did one of the Ultimate series, and so now he's going to be in charge of X-Men and Fantastic Four over at Fox, and that gives me some, you know, I don't know what they'll do with him or what he'll do or whatever, but that gives me some hope that Fox sees some that there's something to having a guy in charge. I think Whedon is going to do great. I think Mark Millar, although he doesn't have the same kind of TV movie background, could be great.
I saw the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show that Whedon putting together put out its first set of like character descriptions today. Somebody made the point, they're like, does that sound like Firefly?
Kind of sounds like Firefly. Hey, you know what? There are worse things to emulate.
Yeah.
A lot worse.
Yeah.
I think it's exciting because I don't think they had talked about a TV show the last time we did a podcast. S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show.
It could be all right. You know.
Yeah. You know, I think as long as they don't try to do too much with the special effects. Like, if they leave the special effects to, like, the season openers and the season closers, then I think they'll be fine. I've also heard it's going to – I heard the term long lead applied to it when it first was announced, which I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, means that they film all of it up front and then they've got plenty of time – or they film a lot of it up front and then they get plenty of time to do the special effects.
That makes sense. Yeah, I mean, I hope it goes well. I worry about it because I feel like, you know, it's fall now, so there's lots of TV shows coming back and starting up. And like every time I see a review of a TV show now, it seems like nobody has an attention span at all, you know, because so the J.J. Abrams, Eric Kripke of Supernatural fame, the new show they've done, Revolution, you know, the basic premise being that one day all the electricity in the world just stops. Stops it altogether. You know, of course there's a conspiracy there. Because it's an Abrams show.
Exactly.
But you know, I saw reviews of the first episode and people were like, I don't understand what's happening. Why is this electricity gone out? What? It's like, guys, that's the whole point of the show. The whole point of the show is that's the mystery that they're trying to solve.
Right.
You know, but the reviews are like, I don't, you know, if they don't start giving us answers, like, it's not Lost. This isn't season five. You're not like, I don't understand. What is the smoke monster? What is going on with that? You know, it's just started. I gotta say, actually, I kind of liked the show. I wasn't sure at first. I was kind of like, that girl is really eating the scenery. But three episodes in, I'm actually really starting to dig it. But yeah, so that's my fall surprise, I guess.
Yeah. Is that an NBC show?
It is, yes.
Yeah. Well, as long as it's general network, I can probably catch it somewhere.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of TV I need to catch up on.
I was really surprised with that show. Actually, they put the whole first episode online the week before it came out. Not like illegally, the network did it.
The network did it. Huh.
I guess they were worried people weren't going to notice it in the week when everything was starting or something.
Right, yeah. Everything starts so much later. Every year it gets later. I remember back when I was in college, it was like the first week of September things started.
You could always count on it. School would start and TV shows would start.
And now, and then it started to get to like middle of September. Now it's the end of September.
Or October. I mean, Supernatural, which, you know, okay, it's, you know, kind of a middle of the road show, but it's a popular show, starts today. Right. American Horror Story Asylum, or American Horror Asylum, I guess it is now, is going to start on like the 24th or something later this month. I mean, it's weird. Like even How I Met Your Mother, which is a staple comedy, you know, CBS started on the 24th of September or something.
Right. Well, I don't know. Everyone's just taking longer and longer summer vacations, I guess.
It's very weird. And like, what's weird now is that there are a lot of networks that do these seasons that are short, but between the end of spring and, you know, so like over the summer, like, I watch Warehouse 13 on Sci-Fi, which I like, but it just ended. It had its mid-season thing this week. Although, really, in recent memory, nothing has been as bad as Battlestar Galactica Season 4, where the amazing reveal of the final five. And, okay, so see you in a year and 3 months.
Is that how long it actually took? Because I watched the whole thing after the fact.
Dude, it was over a year.
Oh, wow.
Like, no. Just no.
Oh, wow.
That hurt. That really hurt. Yeah, so I don't know. Apparently the reason we have, I didn't know this, I guess I should have thought about it, but the reason we have the fall TV season start when it does is because it 60 years ago it coincided with when new car models came out.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, like apparently they wanted to get the advertising to match up, so they had, they had to start when the new cars came out.
Huh.
I didn't know that, but apparently that's why we did it, and that's why we kept that for so long.
Is that like a Mad Men fact? That didn't bring that up in the show, did they?
No, I read it. I read it on NPR. I think it was an article about, you know, do TV seasons even matter anymore? You know, doing them. It was kind of weird because networks, you know, of course, are trying to make money all year round. So there is real tension between like their advertisers and what the network wants. So. Yeah.
Well, let's see. I think we covered pretty much everything. I got to go up and grab my kid at the bus stop in a little while. No, we still got a little bit of time. One last thing I wanted to talk to you about, unless you have something, is the Hobbit trailer. There's a new Hobbit trailer that came out.
It's very exciting.
And Radagast was in it. Am I right in thinking it? Because you were talking to me last time about Radagast.
That's the brown.
And there's...
He's kind of the Daphne of the wizard set. If we're liking Scooby-Doo, he really is just kind of like the, the eye candy. Yeah. No, that's not going to work. Let's face it, he's a little more like Velma. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was like, wait, does he mean Velma? He's saying Daphne.
Yeah, but he's kind of the one where you're like, you have no discernible skills. Why are you here?
Right. So he's like Velma in appearance and Daphne and intelligence. Definitely liked it. Am I right in thinking that I thought I heard a rumor that there were a bunch of different endings to it? No?
I haven't heard that. Okay. I think it's kind of unlikely because it's the first of three. So
No, I mean the trailer.
Oh, the trailer. Yeah, I heard something about it being recut for a couple different countries, but my understanding was that was for content reasons.
Okay.
Which is a fun with The Hobbit, but, you know.
The only part of the trailer that felt weird to me, and not weird in a bad way, was when I think it's a troll at the very end falls down and crushes the dwarves. And it's so much more humor than I've come to expect from any of the movies so far.
The Hobbit is a much more lighthearted book at times.
Right.
You know, so there is that, you know, and certainly some of the dwarves are pretty ridiculous, but I'm okay with it. And there are funny things that happen in The Lord of the Rings, too.
Yeah. Well, and it's well set up. I mean, there's I almost said Frodo. There's Bilbo running, you know, it's saying he's off on an adventure.
Right.
And there's all sorts of bits that lead up to, you know, a funny final moment. Yeah. But there's also like Bilbo being a badass when he's got Sting and he's
it's true.
And he's fighting there. I didn't expect that shot. That was great.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah. When is that middle of December? Or is that towards the end of September? I mean, December.
What? It's out now.
Go. It's out now. Let's go. What are we podcasting for?
December 14th, I think.
Okay.
13th or 14th, whichever one is that Friday. So I can look. It's not like I'm sitting in front of a computer.
Yeah, no. Not at all. I feel like there's something 14th. Else. Oh, this is 40. That's the other one that I want to see this holiday season. Because as of Friday, I will be closer to 40 than I am to 30.
It's true. You're nearly dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that.
We'll cheer you up. You'll have to wait a couple months, but we'll go see Django Unchained.
That's another one. Yeah.
Django Holy Unchained. God. It looks so awesome. Seriously, people, if you haven't seen the trailer for Django Unchained, go watch it now.
The D is silent.
You're welcome. All right. So that was kind of a weird podcast today.
It is. And that's what makes it amazing and terrible all at once.
Oh, final thing. Sorry. Did you see the weird conspiracy theory about Agent Coulson and the Avengers?
That he might be brought back as the Vision?
Well, apparently when they put the movie out in the UK, people noticed that the moment, spoiler alert, where Loki kills Agent Coulson, you see in the American version, we saw the blade go right through Coulson,
right
behind. In the UK version, no blade, just blood, and he falls down. And people thought, oh, did they do that? Because after they put it out, they decided they were going to bring him back forever. And it was like, you know, I saw it on a lot of blogs, and apparently it turns out, actually, they did it to keep the rating in.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So they digitally removed the blade. So
yeah,
still no Agent Coulson.
No Agent Coulson. Yeah. And I mean, you know, for those of us who were there in that theater that day watching all those movies back to back, we should have known what they were doing because they had Coulson introduce every single movie.
Except one. There was one.
Except one. And I think that's the theater's fault. I think there probably was a Coulson bit there that they just didn't play.
I think it was Iron Man 2, maybe.
Yeah, I think you're right. And then they set us up for him dying.
Still freaking a bummer.
Whedon.
Yeah.
He kills them all off.
Unbelievable.
Anyway.
That dude needs to be stopped.
Yeah.
I think the next Joss Whedon movie should have none of the characters die until, like, whatever conflict is resolved and they're all just eating shawarma, and then one of them should choke to death. I think that's what should happen.
It should be a Mamas and the Papas biopic.
Yeah.
And Mama Cass just...
No, there should be that moment of like, oh my God, do we make it through a Joss Whedon movie without anybody dying? And the credits come up and you're like, we did, we totally made it. And then the credits go down and the scene comes up and they're all kicking around. Oh my God, Tony Stark is dead. That would be wonderful.
That would.
All right, on that cheery note, 37, man.
37, in a row.
In a row. So we'll see you next time.
Next time.
Bye.
Bye. Chewbacca!
Sha Khan Ho Han Solo.